scores!
Ruiz slides! Rollins has won it! They stream out of the dugout! Yeah. Rollins by near third! This game is over!
Second deck walk-off home run! Grand slam, Bryce Harper!
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode 565. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And coming up, we're going to recap the Phil's Angels series a little bit further. I did an up and in for you on Monday morning to kind of give you the nitty-gritty on all the statistics and everything that went down. But we're going to talk about some of the larger issues. We'll zoom out a little bit and talk about the Phil's and where they stand now under the Rob Thompson era. Three games in, undefeated Rob Thompson, now the leader in the clubhouse for NL Manager of the Year, of course. Joining me to do that are my good buddies Justin Clue and Dr. Trevor Strunk is joining the podcast tonight. Of course, you know, well, we're going to introduce Dr. Trevor Strunk first. You know him as one half of the Dirty Inning, and he has also got a fantastic podcast called No Cartridge. You're still doing No Cartridge, right, Trev?
I am, yeah, for my sins.
That's right. Okay. You follow him on Twitter at Hegelbond. And yeah, Trev, just for folks who don't, and if you don't listen to The Dirty Inning, I will publicly shame you on any forum that's possible. But for folks who don't know about No Cartridge, just real quick, let them know what it is.
It's basically we have people on to talk about video games, but sort of from all sorts of different sides, creators, journalists, just fans sometimes, try and approach it from a direction that you haven't heard yet. And I think, you know, it's a lot of fun conversations. We come up with some interesting ideas, and, you know, it runs the gamut. We're all fans, but we're all sort of, critical thinkers about it, too. So, you know, if you like video games, I think it's probably up your alley.
If you're ever in the mood for a podcast about Intellivision, I'm your guy.
Don't tempt me, John.
The other half of the Dirty Inning is also here. Of course, Justin, you know from Baseball Prospectus and Continued Success, as well as the Dirty Inning. Follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, what's up with you, pal?
Hello.
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 Hi.
Now
see,
I get
boy,
to do it.
It feels all nice when you guys do that.
Nice to have the old gang. Listen, if you guys want to pool our money, I'm starting to consider, you know, now that the Phillies are in vogue again, that maybe Ryan Howard's relisted $6 million Rittenhouse condo is a possibility. Yeah,
oh,
cool.
Okay.
Seems like a cool place to hang.
It
I don't
does.
Know if you guys are up to the cool places to hang in Philadelphia, but Rittenhouse Square, extremely cool.
That's a great idea, because I think, like, that's one of those ones that you'd buy and flip, right?
Yeah,
like you'd buy
if
it, and then if Rob Thompson can manage to win a fourth game, at that point, I mean, you sell it for $1 million more than you bought it for.
That's
right.
What I usually do with properties like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And if we stayed, then, like, our neighbors would be, like, you know, like an old lady who hasn't been outside in 35 years.
Uh-huh.
Or, like,
uh-huh,
the ghost of some twins that died in the building. Yeah. You know, and you just, you don't want to get into that old Philadelphia stuff.
Yeah,
like, that's a layer you don't want to peel back.
We peel that back every week on The Dirty.
That's right.
I'm assuming that's why Ryan Howard doesn't live there anymore.
That's right.
Yeah.
Old Mrs. Janeway used to accost Ryan out in the mail room every other Tuesday and, you know, get him to babysit her cat for him. All right, let's do the show here. What's happening with the Phillies right now? It's what a bizarre turnaround. This team makes absolutely no sense. They go and they fire Joe Girardi before the weekend gets started on Friday. Then they come out and they blast the Angels 10-0 in the first game. They win the second game on Saturday pretty easily on national TV, 7-2. And then on Sunday, just a miraculous comeback win with Bryce Harper's grand slam to tie the game. And then the walk-off three-run home run by Bryson Stott, of all people, to win it. A couple interesting little pieces of info for you here on what happened on Sunday. According to @PassOnJim, which is not the same as Jeff Passan of ESPN, totally different person, the Phillies became the first team to hit a game-tying grand slam in the eighth inning or later in the third team, pardon me, to hit a game-tying grand slam in the eighth inning or later in the live ball era. Jimmy Fox did it in May of 1945. Jim Command or Command, I have no idea how you say his name, did it in July of 1954, and then Bryce Harper in June of 2022. So again, that stat, the Phillies, it was the third time in Phillies history there was a game-tying grand slam in the eighth inning or later of the live ball era. And then Bryce Harper became the first player in Phillies franchise history with both a walk-off grand slam and a game-tying grand slam in the eighth inning or later in their career. Of course, Harper with the walk-off grand slam against the Cubs a few years ago. Just general first thoughts here, Justin, before we get started on what you saw this weekend against the Angels.
I'm kind of curious, looking back at the last few years when the Phillies have managed to win like this, how low on the team everybody in the city has generally been. Because it seems like it keeps coming at exactly the right time for the Phillies to be like, okay.
They keep baiting the hook, man.
Wasted the whole summer yet. Come on down to the stadium. Spend a couple $100 on your kids and stuff. Yeah, I feel like once again, I try to be careful about announcing anything like truly definitive. Like, I'm out on these Phillies. Now, yeah, maybe someone can go back and splice together a montage of me saying that repeatedly. But I really, in my head, think that I don't say that too often, because you say that too much, then it just stops meaning anything. And I was saying this year that this team's buried and I don't think they're going anywhere. And they are still pretty buried. But this was the exact opposite kind of weekend I think I expected them to have. I mean, it's great that they're playing these top teams that are on their way down in the Angels and then the Brewers that have been struggling lately. But it is still like a much needed trio of games and wins like over a single weekend that this team like desperately needed. And I know we spent the last few weeks telling each other, like literally just turning to each other and saying, you know, Joe Girardi's not the only problem, but it's still okay to fire him. And like, yeah, I don't know who we were talking to at that point, because everybody was literally saying the same thing.
Yeah. Stop grabbing my shoulders. I understand. Yes, I agree. Yes, we're all saying the same thing. Yeah.
But also, do we really think that anymore? Because,
no.
I mean, the evidence was pretty damning. And then you cap it all off with a Bryce Harper, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hey, nobody, you know, thank God Joe's not here anymore commentary. And suddenly it's like, well, maybe the thing they needed to bring it all together was firing the guy who was tearing it all apart.
Yeah, Trev, I mean, what you got, I think... What seems to happen in a situation like this is that it sends a shockwave everywhere and maybe just shakes guys out of their doldrums or whatever. Firing a manager may not even be necessarily the manager's fault, but if you need to shake something up, that's really the only thing you can do aside from tearing down half your roster. And so I think the question we're all trying to figure out is how much of this was the Phillies responding to the managerial change? I think it was certainly part of it. And how much of it was facing an Angels team that was riding an 8-game losing streak coming in with subpar pitching and Mike Trout in the worst slump of his major league career?
Well, first off, let me say, Mike Trout being in the worst slump of his career, I looked at the thing and it's like 1-for-23, which is really, it speaks to how good Mike Trout is.
I wonder how many times in the past 10 years a Phillies hitter, any Phillies hitter, has been in a 1-for-23 slump.
I'm pretty sure while we said this, another Phillies hitter just miraculously ended up in a 1-for-23 slump. Like, it's what happens. They are born into it. Like, it's incredible. Like, it's an amazing career he has. Like, just unbelievable. But yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, part of it is definitely the Angels being kind of at a weak moment. I don't think we can really underestimate that. However, we've seen the Phillies like do really poorly against teams that are struggling, right? Like, there've been a million times this season where we're like, okay, they're getting this team right when they want them and they lose.
Yeah.
They just miserably get, oh, this team doesn't have any hitting at all. And they score 10 runs and the Phillies score zero. Like, I feel like we've talked our way through a million various instances like that. And so, you know, the fact that they were able to execute against the Angels almost means more to me than the fact that, you know, it almost means more to me than like, oh, they took 2 or 3 from the Dodgers. That I'd say like, oh, great, but it's a fluke. The fact that they can beat a team that's struggling is, and this is like, you know, pure WIP, but like the fact that they beat a team that's struggling, just they can play up to competition they can actually like achieve against a team they should achieve against. That's really reassuring to me. Oh, go ahead.
This team can't be picking and choosing how and when its wins come at this point.
No.
Again, can't stress enough. Still in a hole. But, you know, I feel like we've had a pretty realistic tone here to start the show. So I do just want to say that this was a life-giving weekend of utterly thrilling baseball that I was genuinely looking forward to watching on Sunday, which is why I was so sure they were going to lose when they went down by so much. And I was like, yeah, I was looking forward to this one. This one's obviously good. And then obviously what happened, and it felt like, all right, this is, you know, we kept asking after every win for a while there, is this the start of the comeback? Is this the start of the comeback? And finally, it's like, well, this one I could actually believe that they would manage to turn this into a turnaround of sorts, because they broke the pattern. And yes, they did it against the team most commonly considered the American League Phillies.
That's right. That's just the art.
But again, they can't really pick and choose how and when they win. They just need to start stacking up wins, and they need to do it against good teams as badly as they need to do it against bad teams. So I don't think the circumstances of these victories matters as much as like how the Phillies were able to achieve them and that they continue them.
There's a couple different things I'm feeling after what happened on Sunday, because I want to enjoy just Sunday in and of itself, and I want to enjoy the weekend in and of itself, because it was a fun weekend at the ballpark. It was a full stadium. It wasn't sold out, but there was about 35,000 fans there, because you've got the hometown kid Mike Trout coming to Philadelphia, and he almost never comes to play here. And you've got Shohei Ohtani, one of the most exciting and electrifying players. I wish he had pitched this weekend, but it's actually good for the Phillies that he did. I think, because you saw what the Angels were throwing out there. But I want to enjoy this series for what it is, because you watch baseball, especially as a kid, to make memories. I have these games from the mid to late 80s when I first started watching baseball that really meant nothing in the grand scheme of things as far as going to the playoffs and something that's going to be remembered for years and years and years. But they were special to me because as a young kid, I was really invested. And sometimes that's just what sports does. It gives you that moment. It gives you that day. It gives you that game that you remember something, and it'll be something you keep with you for the rest of your life. As we get older now, I think we start to, like Justin was kind of alluding to, we ask ourselves, okay, we know that the playoffs is the goal. The breaking this 10-year drought is the goal. We know the payroll. We know the pressure the team is under. And we've seen over and over again, when the Phillies have had really big moments like this, they have failed to take advantage of it and use it as a springboard. And so the question we naturally ask ourselves is, will they take what happened on Sunday and the weekend as a whole, and for once in our lives, actually build off this? And I think with Rob Thomson as the manager, obviously it's going to be a little bit of a different vibe. It'll be interesting to see how he has this team ready to play against a very good Brewers team in Milwaukee on Tuesday night. It's, you know, the schedule eases up, but these Brewers are very difficult to play. And so I guess, Trev, what I'm asking here is, how much belief do you have that this team can take this, again, with a new skipper who we don't really know much about just yet? We don't have any idea what he's like in the clubhouse. We hear certain things, but we don't really know what he's like.
Sure.
What is your confidence level that they can move forward?
I mean, so there's two ways of saying that. My confidence level that they're going to just, like, make a run and win the NL East, or, like, you know, enter the playoffs and make a run, I don't have a terribly high confidence in that. Like, I'll be perfectly honest with you. Like, I would love to see it. I don't think that's going to happen, and that's fine. Like, you know, in a certain way, that's fine. Like, if you were honestly expecting that, I feel like you probably aren't watching the same team. Now, are they going to build on it and be a better team as a result of it? Yes, I think so. Because, you know, I was thinking about this. I have a high level of confidence in that, because I was thinking about the fact that, you know, there's been a lot of ink spilled over the fact that these Phillies are just, you know, they're basically pros and they're bored, and it's, you know, oh, Nick Castellanos and Kyle Schwarber brought in, and yeah, they're free agents, but that's not what a team's made of, blah, 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 blah. And it got me thinking, like, there are people like that in baseball, right? Like, there are people who are like, oh yeah, they stopped playing well when they got paid, or they're just like okay after that, you know, they don't have any heart or whatever. Like, people, you know, talk about folks like that all the time, but it's not every player, right? Like, it's a couple players. It's a specific few. And I think, you know, the vast majority of players are players who get paid a lot of money and can still be hyped up into being, like, just crazy insane into it, right? And these players just weren't. Like, they didn't care. You know, you go down like you do against the Angels yesterday, and you say, like, okay, you know what? If this were Joe Girardi, who cares? Like, why would I want to win it for him? And I know that's cliche, but it feels like they're actually kind of excited about playing if the young guys can play. If, you know, they're allowed to to kind of, like, I forget who it was, but it was either you or Justin or Liz said, you know, they lost the – is it possible they lost the Girardi lost the team when he didn't pitch Corey Knebel right after Bryce Harper tied the game, you know,
right,
a few
back
weeks
in
ago.
Atlanta. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a great insight. Like, it – that, you know, if you're playing for someone who you don't think is going to put you in the best position, who doesn't, like, who thinks, like, every game isn't winnable for you, then what? You're not going to get your energy up for that. Why would you?
And further evidence that Girardi's impact, and therefore also his absence, is the impact of him not being there anymore, is a bigger factor than maybe some people wanted to admit, is that the conversation about the Phillies' young players and their youth, you know, their youth in-house, is everywhere right now following that third win of the post-Girardi era, including
why wouldn't
the it be? Including the Phillies' right. own website. And if there's anything that the Joe Girardi came to be defined by, it was, you know, his bullpen usage and his adherence to his own strict set of rules about rest and who had what jobs. But the second thing was he always favors veterans over young players. And suddenly that's the story of the day after the Phillies sweep a team right after Girardi got fired. I mean, you can't tell me these things aren't related even in such a small sample size. And as Trev was saying, the vibes coming off this team are completely different than they were even just 4 days ago. Because there were times when this team was reminding you of that same lifeless team that that has been wearing Phillies uniforms for the past few years. You're not going to catch anybody accusing them of being lifeless at this point. I mean, they were vibing off each other. They were clearly, right. you know, they were clearly able to have a more positive mindset when they went into the game. When they got buried, they were able to dig their way out. That's something they've really failed at doing. They've lost so many games, by last count, more games than anybody else by one run.
Yeah,
like,
right,
or
right.
games where they've scored one run or less. And this lineup, this team can't afford to have its lineup perform like that. That this team is right. designed to thrive off its lineup. So whatever Joe Girardi was doing, I'm pretty convinced it was squashing a lot of the ways that this team was supposed to be its most effective. And I think with him going and being able to play younger guys and being able to, like, see these guys just be more comfortable, they're going to excel. And I think it makes a turnaround seem even more possible.
Yeah, because sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you have, like, a smartest guy in the room thing going, right, which Girardi seemed to be doing with his bullpen usage, right? Like, oh, this is about rest. It's about this is a plan. It's all a plan. That stuff works great if you're winning, right? Like, that stuff feels really good to all the players. They're like, yeah, my manager's super smart. He gets it. We're going to win because, like, we got the smartest dude there is. When you're losing, feels horrible.
Right.
No one wants that. Like, Bryce Harper's not, you know, let's not even use Bryce Harper. Like, Nick Castellanos is not sitting there being like, you know what, the bullpen usage is actually done in a very reasonable way, and I support my skipper for this. He's thinking, like, I bet our good relievers could have gotten us out of this one inning jam.
Right. You know, we talk about offense feeds energy, and sometimes you know it's hard to know which is coming from where. When you start off the series with a big 10-0 win, and then you start off in game two and you score five runs in the first inning, I think honestly the key to the series, as I look back on everything, was Johan Camargo in the first inning on Saturday. The Phillies had a 2-0 lead, but they had the bases loaded and two out. I think Rhys Hoskins had come to the plate right before that, or somebody had come to the plate right before that and struck out, and you were looking at a situation where, like, getting two runs is great, but it's going to be deflating if they don't add on here. And then Camargo comes through and laces a two-run single into right field. Now, all of a sudden, you've got a 4-0 lead. And then I just think that changes the whole complexion of that Saturday game and really sets up the whole rest of the weekend, so that, you know, Mickey Moniak gets the infield single. It's 5-0. You get those insurance runs in the eighth inning to make it a nice, comfortable victory, and then you go into Sunday and you have all that magic happen. And it's easy to have fun when you're scoring runs, when you're hitting home runs, when Kyle Schwarber's at the top of the lineup getting on base and everything. And so there is a part of a chicken and egg kind kind of thing when it comes to energy versus and offense and winning and all that kind of stuff. But I do think some of the things that we've heard from Bryce Harper specifically, calling out Joe Girardi for not playing the young players, I think that's factoring into it. Now, I will say Girardi gave Bryson Stott essentially, what, the first 3 weeks of the season and then bailed. And so it's not that Bryson Stott was kind of playing middling and Joe took him out. He was bad. And Camargo had gotten hot by that point, and so you started playing Camargo at short a whole lot. But you're never going to get anywhere with Bryson Stott if he's playing once a week, twice a week, or something like that. And that's the point that Bryce Harper was making when he was talking about the importance of playing younger guys. Alex Coffey had this in her story from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Harper said, the thing about Bryson is, talking about Bryson Stott, is he's got to play. He's used to playing every day. From high school to college to minor league baseball to now, he's used to playing every day, and that's what we've got to do for our young guys. Our young guys have got to play. When you want your young guys to have success, they have to play every day. Sensing a pattern here, guys. And when they have those opportunities, I think they're going to take full advantage of that. If that's Bryson, if that's Maton, if that's Bomer, they call Alec Bohm Bomer, or anybody else, we need our young guys to come in each day being ready to play and knowing that we have the faith in them to go out there and do their job and have fun doing it. Seems pretty clear to me that Harper wanted his buddy Stott and the young guys to be playing more. And so that's where a lot of the energy comes into from the young guys. These guys might fail a little bit, but Joe Girardi seemed to have a quick hook on a lot of these young guys, right. And it sure seems like the rest of the team, Trev, wanted the young players to play.
Sure, and I think, you know, don't underestimate the fact that if you see your manager, you know, you tell the manager, like, you know, Bryce Harper basically said as publicly as he could, like, I think Bryson Stott's a special player, and the manager says, okay, let's give it a try. And then the manager says, I'm sorry, he failed. I can't play this guy anymore. I'm going to, like, do we have any, like, free agent, minor league deal shortstops we could put in this place? Like, don't underestimate how much that, like, that actually impacts the personal sort of makeup of the team, or, like, the people's attitudes, right? Like, you know, Bryce Harper's not a robot. He has feelings. Like, you're looking at that and he's saying, like, so the skipper values me that much. Like, you know, like, he values my insight on this that much. He's willing to put him up, give him no chance at all, and then send him to the minors, bring him back up, and just bench him. Like, that's, you know, why would you? Like, it's a way to breed frustration. I'm not claiming that he just, like, then threw every game or something. He is a professional. But is he playing with passion when he's, like, when he's looking at the lineup and thinking, like, there's no energy here? I don't, probably not.
Yeah. I don't know, Justin. I mean, was Bryce Harper, he wasn't being overt about it, but he was taking a shot at Girardi here, right?
Yeah. At first, I kind of didn't really believe that, but this is kind of like stuff he likes to do. I mean, he knows he's in a position where he can say his mind and no one's going to, you know, drop the hammer on him or anything. So, yeah, I think you can read his comments and assume he is talking about Girardi. The truth is, there aren't even that many spots filled on this team by, like, the young guys, because we all know, like, what this team's relationship with its player development system has been the past few years. And, you know, that's left us with, you know, not a lot of space, you know, for these young guys. And it's still kind of a bit of a mess as far as, like, what everyone's future or present role here is. But that's how this team's supposed to work. Again, you know, you're supposed to be able to have room at the bottom of your lineup for Alec Bohm to produce quietly, for Bryson Stott to figure out hitting in the major leagues, for
Moniak
to get promoted and not immediately start thinking, okay, how long do I have before this dream is over?
Right.
Because the top of your lineup is supposed to be one of the best in baseball. The top of your lineup is supposed to be helping to produce 5, 6, 7 runs a night so that the bottom of your lineup can get its stuff together and suddenly you're producing 7, 8, 9 runs a night. You know, that's supposed to be the luxury of going over the luxury tax. So I'm happy to see that this is a more positive outlook for the younger members of the younger regular starters for the Phillies, because they deserve a more steadfast opportunity where they're not always just thinking, okay, is it back on the bus after this game? What is Joe thinking? A guy who already leans away from having younger players in the lineup regularly. I feel like this is a great opportunity for this team to be the version of itself that it was supposed to be.
And I think what we've heard about Joe Girardi about intensity, I think it just seemed like players were playing tight. and it just seemed like they were playing looser. And again, I don't know if that's because they were scoring runs or if by being looser, they were able to score more runs. It's just, again, one of those chicken and egg things that's really hard to get a handle on when you're, you know, when you're watching major league players and you don't really know what's going on inside the locker room. We'll take our quick break here. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the Harper Slam on Sunday and the Bryson Stott homer to win it. And we'll talk about the closer situation, too, because lost in everything on Sunday, the Phillies closer, Corey Knebel, almost blew another one. So not blew a save, but almost cost the Phillies the game. So we'll dive into all that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So just a couple other things to put a pin on Sunday afternoon. I've been having a real hard time, guys, trying to decide which I thought was more exciting or which I thought maybe enjoyable is the right word. I'm not really sure. But what did you guys think was the more, I guess we'll call it the more exciting hit? Justin, did you think that the Harper Grand Slam in the eighth inning was more exciting or the Stott walk-off home run when they were behind by a run to win it?
Well, I'm trying to think of the word I want to use to describe Stott's because I really don't want to discredit him. But, I mean, Bryce, have you ever seen Bryce Harper hit a home run?
No.
It's like a different kind of thing.
Than
a home run that you're like, well, is it going to get over? No, it's like that was a weapon was just discharged.
Right.
And that's why I like, we'll get into reactions and you know, mm-hmm. whose calls and stuff. But like that one was just more of a thunderclap for me. And that was, I feel like the less likely it honestly felt like because they were down by so much and it was late and those are the types of games we've seen this team lose. But once he hit that, it was like, oh yeah, they can't lose now. Even with Knebel giving up the lead, like they cannot lose this game. And you just want to be able to trust that they're a team that can agree with you and stand up and be like, yeah, no, this is we pulled ourselves back into this game. We're a team that's good enough to score the two runs we need to win. We have an offense that can do that. We have a bunch of guys who can stand up in a big moment and not come up small. Like, this is what we can do this. You want them to believe that. I mean, I just read a Tom Seaver quote where he's like, most of this game is proving what you can do to your teammates. And this team proved what they could do. We've now, like, this won't be unprecedented if it happens again. We know that this team can come back. We know that Bryce Harper can perform in a clutch moment. And we know that Bryson Stott can come through as well. You know, he did it once. Yeah. Why can't he do it again? But to answer your question, I was definitely louder in my reaction to the Bryce Harper home run.
Yeah, and I think, Trev, and I'll ask you the same question, which you thought was more exciting. But for me, the Harper Grand Slam felt like an adrenaline hit. You know, it just is like, whoa, kind of, you know, there's an odd, you can, and we're going to play all the calls here in just a second, but my favorite is actually not one of the ones that I would usually probably choose for that very reason. It just felt like Harper's was like a lightning bolt that came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I can see that. I, you know, one of the things that I struggle with in sports a lot, not just the Phillies, there's another. I don't know if people have mentioned this about.
It's feeling anything. I don't feel.
No.
It's like feeling, a giant callus with shoes on.
It's feeling too much. I don't know if you've heard about this team called the Eagles that are in the Philadelphia sports landscape as well. I feel like the Phillies and the Eagles share this thing, particularly for me. So maybe it's just my sports fandom, where when I see something starting to happen, I know it's going to happen. Right? It's like, okay. Yeah, all right, here's how we lose. And it almost doesn't matter if that's actually true or not. I think a lot of times it's not true, right? A lot of times that's being, you know, fatalistic for no reason. But it does happen. And, you know, once the Angels retook the lead, right? Once it was like, oh, yeah, look at that. The Phillies. yeah, there you go.
Phillies. Now your system.
The Phillies messed it up again, right? Like the Phillies had it. And they dropped it, right? Like, they just, like, they had it, and they would have been such a good story, and now it's nothing. So, like, for me, that was the moment where I was like, yeah, same old Phillies. This is what we get. We get the same old Phillies, even under, you know, I thought they had a lot of hope after the Grand Slam. It was super exciting. And then it's like, okay, but they're still going to lose. And so, like, Stott's was almost, I won't say it was more exciting, but I will say it was more satisfying for me because it was like, I love when that script is flipped because it feels like emotionally that it isn't flipped enough. That like the teams usually just give me what I expect, and getting something different here where someone actually gets the clutch hit and it's a young guy and it's against a team that like should be good, right? That's so exciting. That's so cool.
And we can't stress enough that yes, the Philly schedule is still in the tough part, but the first obstacle for this new brand of Phillies of 2022 to tackle isn't, you know, okay, they swept a team that was struggling. That was good. But it isn't the Brewers. They're the next challenge. The next challenge was today, where they didn't play any baseball at all, and they have to come into tomorrow with the same momentum.
With the same energy.
And we'll see what happens, because that's another that's another monster on the back of this team that they have trouble shaking off. So we'll see.
Well, and we remember last year that schedule got so easy for them at the end of the year, and they still were not able to take advantage of it. And maybe that was because they were playing tight under Girardi. We'll see if Thompson can actually get them to take advantage of the scheduling, the schedule easing up a little bit, because they were not able to do that last year.
A lot of people forget this, guys. The other team's trying to win, too.
The other team's trying to win, too.
No.
Yeah.
What?
I just think it's interesting. Look, thinking about the Bryce Harper Grand Slam, for most players, that the Grand Slam that Harper hit against the Angels in the eighth inning on Sunday would have been the biggest hit of their careers, right? There'd be no bigger hit than that than they could ever have in their entire career. The home run Bryson Stott hit could be the biggest of his career.
Yeah, that'd be very likely,
right?
Sure.
Right.
It's a huge hit.
So for Bryce Harper, if you go by wins probability added, and I wrote this up for the Good Fight today, it's the seventh clutchiest hit of his career so far.
It's so funny.
It's the fourth clutchiest hit as a Philly. Like, there have been three other hits from him that had greater win probability added than that Grand Slam. Now, it didn't win the game for the Phillies, but it did save the game for them, right? I mean, it kept them alive. But the biggest is obviously the Grand Slam that he hit against the Cubs back in 2019. There was a walk-off double against the Dodgers in July of 2019. Where the Phillies were down 8-6 heading into the ninth inning, and then Harper hits a two-run double, and they win 9-8. And then the home run with the game we're talking about earlier against the Braves, where Joe Girardi then brought in Nick Nelson for that second inning. That home run in the top of the ninth that Harper hit to put the Phillies up by a run had a higher win probability added than the Grand Slam that he had on Sunday against the Angels. So
that's wild.
He's had a crazy career when it comes to these clutch hits. And ironically, the one hit of his career that is the highest was when he was with the Nationals, and it came against the Phillies back in April of 2017 when he came to the plate with two on and two out, Phillies leading 4-3 in the bottom of the ninth, and he hit a three-run walk-off home run with the Nationals off of Joaquin Benoit
back in 2017. Oh, my. It's so funny. I keep forgetting that Joaquin Benoit was on the Phillies.
I know.
It's like a bad dream.
Yes. Joaquin Benwoof.
More like, right?
What?
All right. One of the other things I did.
I'll do it for hitting season.
That's right. let's ramp it down. So Harper's Grand Slam obviously had a lot of great calls. I'm going to play them all here so people can hear them, and I want to ask you guys what your favorite was. Okay, so first, here's the Tom McCarthy call with the help from John Kruk and Mike Schmidt.
Yeah, baby! Fly ball to deep right field! This game is tied in a long way! Into the second deck, Bryce Harper! He's just lifted the lid off the yard!
All right, so here's Scott Fransky's on the Phillies radio call with Larry Anderson.
Here's the 3-2. Swung on. Crushed. He's done it. How about that for heroics into the second deck as Bryce Harper has tied this game?
This one was the Phillies Spanish radio call by Oscar Budahain. And I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. My apologies, Oscar, if I'm not.
Quiere lanzamiento, va un batazo, largo para el right field, la bola se va, se va, se va, campanazo! The Bryson Stott! Dejan el terreno, amigos, al equipo de los Angelinos, impulsando tres carreras, su segundo home run.
And then here's Angels TV with Matt Vasgersian. I didn't realize it was Matt Vasgersian the first time I heard it, but here's old Matty on the call.
Ballpark is as loud as it's been all weekend. 3-2 to Harper. It's hit a bunch. Santa Maria. He did it. An absolute heartbreaker. Oh, my goodness. He absolutely crushed that ball.
And then finally, here's Angels Radio. I have no idea who the Angels Radio play-by-play guy was, but this one was pretty utterly depressing and wonderful.
Here comes the pitch, and he swings and lifts a high drive that is absolutely blasted into the second deck, and that is a grand slam that has just tied up the game at six. There was no doubt about that one.
All right, so those are the five calls, guys. Justin, which of those five was your favorite?
Man, I really miss back it when MLB.com would post like a top play or a couple of top plays from a game. And if it was like real clutch and real big, they would literally do what you just did and play the home TV, home radio, and then stick the away team's broadcast on at the end as well. And you were just like, why would they do this?
The
but
sadness.
Also, boy,
just hearing the sadness.
Really enjoyed hearing that the light go out behind these announcers' eyes as they enter this utterly joyless state. For that reason, I do want to say I respect Vasgersian's call. He did his terrible Santa Maria thing, he did it like in the same way that they play music on Fox NFL Sunday when somebody gets injured and they go to commercial, and like the sad version of a normally like loud jubilant. He's like Santa Maria, and then I think he almost had to like catch himself that he's not an objective observer. He's the Angels broadcaster.
Right.
This is not great. I was able to recognize that, and like you said, the radio call was so sad. I gotta tell you, I think I knew that was gone though because Mike Schmidt said yeah baby, and like that that got me, and that's why I'm giving it to the TV, the Phil's TV broadcast that time. As glorious as Fransky is, that gave me some juice because that's exactly what Kruk did when he hit the grand slam against the Cubs when he said, God, like
it's
that instantaneous
so
reaction.
Good.
It tells you it's like what I was saying, that when Bryce Harper hits home run, it's just not a home run. That's something from an MCU movie he just did.
Totally. I get it. Yep. How about you, Trev? What was your favorite?
For me, like it's just. So I agree with Justin that it's really fun to hear the sort of away announcers. I never can make it my favorite because it just makes me too sad to think about like how I feel when that happens. Like I'm just like, oh yeah, that sucked when that was the Phillies. I have that niggling voice in the back of my head, but it was still so fun. I will say I can't ever say no to a Fransky. Even when it's against a Spanish language network call, usually the ones I will always pick. Man, I love hearing Scott Fransky call home runs. I live for the banter he has with LA. I can listen to them describe anything, describe like the grass growing. I don't care. But he is just like when he describes like a really big hit, the gravitas and the joy he has in it. It's just. He's probably my favorite announcer going right now. It's a homer pick, but sure. I would listen. I mean, if there's ever a time to listen to Scott Fransky, it's when he has a big hit. Although I agree with Justin, the former major leaguer just going like, yep, okay. It's like that's so good. That's what the Kruk call of the Cubs is my favorite because of that.
Fransky he's so genuine in his reaction. I think that's what I'm saying I like about the he's just also a professional announcer, and he's eloquent. So like when he makes a call, it's usually the best call of the day. I do want to say I'm reminded all the time. I don't even remember which it was, but Raul Ibanez hit a home run, you know, way back in the day. That like I think it's almost the reason that a lot of people found out about Spanish language who like don't regularly listen to them.
Is it La Pelota No Regreso?
Yeah, and it was like it's in my head every time that they do that, and they're like someone explained it. Like, oh yeah, that translates directly to the ball. Does not return or something, and I'm like that's
awesome.
That's great.
That is fantastic.
It was also the best Raul.
Of course. I like the McCarthy call. I thought McCarthy, Kruk, and Schmidt did a really good job on that one too. I agree with you, Justin, that the Schmidt reaction was just it was pitch perfect. And Fransky always does an amazing job. And Larry Anderson, like in the background is always a real good thing. And the Phil Spanish call was excellent as well. I gotta say, I think I enjoyed the Matt Vasgersian call simply because, like you said, Justin, he lost himself for a moment. He got so excited. simply because it was an unbelievably electrifying baseball moment. And he used to call games for MLB Network. Obviously, he did. He was the national guy for a while. And forgetting his place, knowing that he's supposed to be an Angels homer, he quickly tried to dial it down and realized, yeah, oh gosh, this was not what we wanted to see. But I just think that was, to me, what signaled how big a moment that was. When you get even the opposing team's announcer to get all jacked up for it, that's a big dinger. And that's why I thought my favorite was the Angels TV call versus Vesgersian. It's the only time I'll ever pick anything he does over anything Scott Fransky does in my life. But
Vesgersian's not bad, though. I think that's a great pick. Like, for exactly the same reason, because I think, like, we hear, I've heard a million people get furious at announcers when that happens. Like, you know, oh, don't sound so happy about it. Like, your team's losing, and there is something joyful about it, like remembering that everyone loves this game for like its spectacle too. That, like, you know, even a guy like Vesgersian, who's like a total pro, is still in love with the game. I mean, that's great. That's cool.
Yep. It's very, very cool. Very cool moment. Just a couple of minutes left here in the show, but I did want to get to the closer situation, because the Phillies almost did waste another Bryce Harper game-saving home run. Corey Knebel did get the ball in the ninth inning this time around. No Nick Nelson to mess things up, but we remember Corey Knebel wasted a Nick Castellanos home run, a go-ahead home run, by blowing a save a couple of weeks ago, and did it again. Really, it wasn't a blown save because the game was tied, but again, allowing the Angels to score a run in the top of the ninth inning. And listen, if you give up a couple of weak bloopy hits or whatever, like, you can't really get mad at a closer for a blown save like that. But what really got you angry was the leadoff walk. And that leadoff walk eventually comes around to score. I mean, I know the runner gets, they try to bunt him over and they get forced at second, but you put that guy on and that guy comes around to score at some point that inning. And that's just something you can't do when you're just handed a moment like that. And you see how well Sir Anthony Dominguez is pitching right now. Brad Hand as well is also pitching extremely good. But neither guy has been scored on in over a month.
Wow.
But for me, I think Sir Anthony Dominguez needs to have that closer's job back right now, Trev. I mean, I wouldn't wait another day. Because Corey Knebel is not a long-time closer. It's not like you're talking about demoting some guy who's led the league in saves for the last 7 years. Knebel can just as easily be brought in the seventh or eighth inning, since Sir Anthony Dominguez is showing you he's got his closer stuff back.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think, look, you know, it's the status is there, right? Like, you know, we all know that it's important to be the closer. Like, that's what these guys want to be. But I feel like Knebel, you know, just like Hand, just like someone like Andrew Miller used to before he retired, like, these are guys who understand that, you know, if you are able to be nails in the seventh inning, that's just as important as being nails in the ninth inning. It just doesn't have the name attached to it. And there is that pressure. Like, I don't know. Like, Knebel always feels like a time bomb about to go off, and I hate closers like that. Dominguez, when he has his stuff going, it just feels like smooth sailing. And I think, like, if he's going that well, if you have Sir Anthony Dominguez pre-injury stuff back, you have to ride with that. Like, I can't imagine not, like, you know, being a manager and not wanting to see what you got there, at least try it a little bit.
Right. And Justin, we talk about young players versus veterans. I imagine Girardi just wanted to kind of keep Knebel going out there because he's the veteran. And I guess Sir Anthony Dominguez is kind of a veteran. I mean, he's not a baby anymore, but he missed a year and a half, 2 years with Tommy John surgery. So he really doesn't have a lot of major league innings under his belt. But I just don't see how you make the argument for Corey Knebel continuing forward as the closer for right now.
Well, he's up to what, 4-5 bad pitches in a month? Is that even really a bad stretch?
It's not even a bad month, no. Yeah, it's not even a bad outing.
Well, and this is exactly the kind of thing. I think you're going to see the people who are blaming Joe Girardi shifting their blame to Corey Knebel at this point. But I think that's totally fair, because this is a guy who's multiple times been handed an important win and then, you know, let it slip through the Phillies' fingers, or done his part to let it slip through their fingers. I think this is the time where you need to start moving stuff around. If you really want to get as many, like, it alarms me every time someone reminds us what the pace is that the Phillies need to win at for the rest of the season to, like, have the amount of wins that they were supposed to have, or an amount of wins that projects them to get a playoff spot. It's a ton. It's a much hotter form of baseball than this team has been playing for 2 months. So to stay at that level, you're going to need to stop tolerating guys who are letting runs trickle in the later innings because, you know, sometimes you're going to have to – sometimes you're just going to want somebody to come out and get three outs in the ninth inning. I don't know. It seems like it's going to be pretty important moving forward.
Kind of a weird position, Justin. I don't know. That seems like it's –
yeah, controversial.
Yeah.
Controversial.
I mean, this is nothing if not a fountain of hot takes over here. And the Phillies have been electroshocked, it feels, a little bit into movement here, like starting with Girardi getting fired, and then the offense and the team putting together three wins against the Angels, and now they're moving key prospects around throughout the system, and it gets you thinking about that and like where Andrew Painter's going to be in a couple of months. Todd Zielecki said today when they were talking about on MLB.com like who's each team's trade chip, and he said Kyle Gibson is the Phillies trade chip, and it started making you think, okay, yeah, because there potentially is some beefier pitching, and you know, this is a different-ish situation than it was to be a Phillies prospect a couple years ago, and things just, yeah, that you got to be a little less patient and observational, I guess, is my point. Like, stuff is starting to move around. The machines just feel like they're starting to come to life a little bit. And I feel like if you manage to win these three games against the Angels, and now you still got a tough slate ahead of you, you got to be a little less inactive when something's not working. And I think that's part of the blessing of Girardi not being here. He would have lived with stuff that wasn't working because it was still accurate according to his charts.
Yes.
So... yeah. I think it's important moving forward to make the changes that Girardi wouldn't because he's not here.
Right. All right. Well, let's finish things up with some final thoughts here. Justin, any final thoughts before we go?
You mentioned a couple of historic events, but I wanted to say that today's the 14th anniversary of Shane Victorino throwing out Gregor Blanco at home plate to win the game.
That's right.
Which, you know, we didn't get to it, but I saw we had a question of, like, what made you react at a baseball game the way that little boy did during the Phillies' comeback win?
Yeah.
And I was trying to think, probably the first time was Mariano Duncan's Grand Slam on Mother's Day.
Oh, yeah, 93.
But also, as a grown-ass person, Shane Victorino, my favorite player from that era, throwing out a Braves base runner at home plate to end a game was something I don't think I'd seen before at that point, and I became inconsolably worked up after that play.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's electrifying.
That was an amazing moment. And just for me, it was the Terry Mulholland no hitter in 1990 was the first big one for me. Trev, final thoughts from you, my friend.
I don't have a moment that made me a fan. I guess the 2008.
I am not a fan.
No.
This team won't debate me, coward.
I was always a Phillies fan because I'm just 4 for 4. But the when I learned to watch baseball and learned to love the team was really the 2008 postseason. I finally figured out why baseball was fun to watch instead of just tolerating it. I tolerated it for a long time before that, but I will say this, like, I think, you know, there's something very fun about loose baseball, right? Like baseball where guys are just enjoying themselves and having a good time. And like, I feel like a lot of the analysis and analytical thinking we've all done, and I mean, like, I'm a fan of it. I've, you know, written a lot about it. Like it makes us kind of like scoff at things like that, like old school things, like gotta play loose, gotta like have fun out there. But like the Phillies were having fun during this sweep, and a sweep is incredibly hard to get. And they had confidence in themselves that they could do it the whole time. And they just like battled back every time. Well, the one time they had a problem.
Right.
And like, you know, it's like, I don't know. What's cool about this team now is that I feel like maybe they could start having fun. And that's what, you know, ultimately that's what was missing from the team. They weren't having a good time, and they were just like a bunch of guys kind of going to work, which made it miserable to watch. And, you know, as I think we talked about this on one of the dirty innings at one point, like it's, you know, changing the manager feels kind of ridiculous in some ways, but if you can change the whole personality of the team, if this team can rally behind someone who is willing to let them have a good time, then I think that could be like, you know, I'm not saying anything big about them at this point, but I think that could be a game changer.
Yeah. Yeah, if they're having a good time, we're having a good time.
Absolutely.
Probably. That's usually how that works. Well, folks, listen, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin and Dr. Trevor Strunk for joining me here on this episode of the podcast. And, folks, I just want to remind you to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon. We got a lot of bonus stuff over there. Go to patreon.com/hittin'season. to sign up and see everything we got over there. And don't forget to tell your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed now that they're doing well again. I'm sure if anybody wants to get more Phillies content into their earballs and they're not already fans of the Good Fight podcast feed, now's the time to shoot them over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is they get their podcast, to give us a listen and a download. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.